Well, grace and peace to each of you as we gather today in this way, and welcome to chapel gathering. It's a privilege to have with us Cheryl Bear and her husband Randy, who will be sharing with us on the theme Indigenous Worldview, Values, and Christianity. And we look forward to that, and Linford Stutzman will introduce them here shortly in our chapel program. I invite you to turn to in your Sing the Journey to number 124 in the back, as we move through a litany of welcome and worship.
I will light a light in the name of the Maker who lit the world and breathed the breath of life for me.
I will light a light in the name of the Son who saved the world and stretched out his hand to me.
I will light a light in the name of the Spirit, who encompasses the world and blesses my soul with yearning. Together, we will light three lights for the Trinity of love: God above us, God beside us, God beneath us, the beginning, the end, the everlasting one. Amen.
Paul writes to the church that God gives gifts for the edification and the growth of the church. These are usually people, prophets, teachers, evangelists. We have a gift from God with us today, Cheryl, Bear, and Randy, gifts. But together, a gift. And they are like prophets to us Christian recent immigrants who tell us a little bit more about what the good news looks like from an indigenous people's point of view. This is an incredibly valuable gift. So that is one of the things that I'm going to introduce them by as a gift of God. The second thing Paul tells us is God gives blessings to people who are following Jesus. And one of the blessings that I've already experienced from Cheryl and Randy was at once in Urbana 2009, where Cheryl gave a presentation to the plenary session, and again at Assembly, MCUSA Assembly last summer in Phoenix, where she also gave a presentation to the plenary session. And the blessing part was those, but was finding out that she comes from the same area where my parents were missionaries for many years, like 20 years. And I spent my high school years in that area with people that she knows. It's just amazing, after 40 years, to be blessed by seeing how God is continuously at work through them and others for the glory of his kingdom. So welcome, Cheryl Bear.
It's very small world in some ways when we become Christians and we learn, we connect in different places in different ways. When we met Linford and Janet in just this past year and found out the common people we knew, or the people that we had in common, it goes even further than that. Linford is being very, very humble, but his father and mother were giving their lives up there. And I mean, my people are the Dakel. We are Bush Indians. And they were really, really rough people and very, very much living off the land. And my goodness. So, and this, you know, and it was when he was a teenager. So this is obviously the late 1800s. So mean.
Oh my.
I'm just not very nice, so get used to that. But no, he was there during a time where it was very, very isolated. Now it's a little easier to get into there, but as I talked, and Native people, when we introduce ourselves, it's always, where are you from? We never ask, what do you do? Because it's not what we do does not define us as Native people. That's one of our worldviews. We we define ourselves by our land. So as soon as I met these guys and started talking about, and as soon as you know where somebody's from, and you know, then you start talking, well, who do you know? One of the people that Linford's family, Professor Linford's family had poured their lives into was a man named, who we called Sylvester Charlie. And he just recently passed away within the last couple of years. They ministered to him and his family. And later on in their ministry and in my early years, when I was just like 12 or something like that, I was learning how to play the guitar. And the people that were the most influential in my life were some of the folks from Linford's family's ministry, Sylvester Charlie, and these different ones. And they poured into my life. And so I am here as a result of your dad's ministry. And I'm so grateful for that. And for the faithfulness of your family going up into a very remote area and not living easily in that area. And I'm sure lots of hardships, but thank you. And thank God for your parents and their faithfulness. This is an example of what, if you give your life and you go someplace, you never know the result of what's going to happen, of what the Lord is going to do with your faithfulness. So I'm grateful for that connection to just inspire others as well. We are in Virginia, aren't we? Yes, we are. Travel. I got like travelitis. I have some jet lag, so forgive me if I'm a little off. I'm always mean, so that's not a result of jet lag. I'm always not very nice. But that's just being native. Native people, we think being mean is funny. And it's kind of a love language. You know, there's the book about five. Ours isn't in there. I don't know what the deal is. Sarcasm and meanness. All, it's just not in there. So, I was here in Virginia a few times before. One of my most favorite times was when we were at a church in Newport News, and we were with a friend of ours named Richard Twiss, how many of you guys remember Richard from when he was here? A few hands, okay. He was a good friend of ours. But we were visiting some friends over there, and I'm not used to the accent in this part of the woods here. It's I had a little bit of trouble, and I love it. It sounds like music to me, but they all said I had an accent. So forgive me if you cannot understand me. But we were going to go with this one lady to a meeting, and they were going to have a potluck. So she said, okay, well, in her beautiful accent, I won't even try because I'll murder it. But she said, we're going to stop on the way because I told them that I would bring a pie or a pa. I think that's what it was. Anyway, so she goes, I'm going to stop at the food line. And I was kind of confused. I thought, well, maybe I can help you out. Like, I just sort of thought maybe I should pay for the pie if we have to go to a food line. What's a food line? What is the deal here with Virginians? And like, I was just confused. So then we pull into this massive grocery store, and it's called Food Lion. And then I said, honey, lion has two syllables. Food Lan. Stop the food lan. Get some pie. Anyway, that was Virginia 101. And we have just really enjoyed ourselves. The hospitality over here is just wonderful. And as I said, I'm from the Dakhel First Nation. We're commonly known as the Carrier Nation. And that's because the French fur traders up in way northern Canada said that our people were very good at carrying heavy, heavy loads for long distances. And I always think that they were prophetic, because that still seems to be the case. And I'm from the village of Natle Watan, and which means the people who, or the place where the salmon go. And that's the name of our village. And I'm from the Bear Clan as well. So the button blanket that you see me wearing now has a bear crest on it. And it's what it means to be from the Bear Clan is, we used to travel with our teenage sons, and now they're not teenagers anymore, so we're not fun to travel with anymore. But there, I would introduce, I would say, well, you know, being from the Bear Clan means, the easiest way to describe it is, if you are from the Bear Clan, then you're probably our cousin. But if you're not from the Bear Clan, then you can date my sons. And my boys always loved that when I said stuff like that. They were like, Mom, my mom. Maybe why they're not here with us today is because I said stuff like that. But anyway, so I'm from the Bear Clan. And somebody said one time about our artwork, our Northwest Coast artwork is just a little different and sometimes can be a little freaky. So one lady looked at my bear and said, that bear looks really scary. And I said, no, this bear is not scary. Just early in the morning before coffee. Then, yes, then we're a little scary. And this is my husband. Speaking of scary, this is my husband, Randy. He's not scary at all. But people often look at Randy and they're a little confused because he has a ponytail. And they're like, is he an Indian? Is he a trucker, a biker, a hippie? And I say, no, he's just a white guy. But I'm thinking that we could maybe get him a job as an extra on Duck Dynasty. I'm thinking that might work. So all my cousins, there's a little girl, she just turned 7, one of my little nieces, and she comes up and she puts her hands right on Randy's face, and she goes, Duck Dynasty. All our Indians on the res, they just love to tease Randy. It's so fun. We just think we're so funny.
These are seminary students. They don't watch television.
So. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I remember my days in seminary. I went to Regent College in Vancouver, and oh my goodness, it was awesome, and it was just amazing to sit and to learn and enjoy. And of course, it was so hard. I was stressed out, and all of the due dates and everything. Yeah. I remember it being very stressful. And then it was over, and I looked back, and I was like, how did time just fly by so fast when I was there? So I encourage you in the midst of the due dates and all of that, just to enjoy the process, because it's over quick. It's mm-hmm. quicker than you realize. And we are at a Mennonite college. I really appreciate the Mennonite people in my life. And, you know, as Native people, you know, we like to joke around, as I shared and all of this, and we're always laughing and teasing one another. And a couple of times I went to a Mennonite church and I would tell one of our jokes, and there would be kind of, you know, not really any laughter. And I was like, oh, you know, what can I say? So then I started talking, and I started learning a little more about Mennonites. And I realized Mennonites love our cousin jokes. You guys get all of our cousin jokes. Because you guys have kind of the same problem we do. But anyway. So I say that in Mennonite churches, and everybody will really laugh. I'm like, yes. So I'm really happy about that. Our cousin jokes. And I even have a song called Hey Cousin. And one of Randy's friends, who is a Native guy, one of Randy's 35-year Native friendships he's got, I said, hey, I wrote a song called Hey Cousin. And this guy goes, is it a love song? So bad. See, you guys get it. I love it. I'm going to open up I'm going to share a prayer song right now. This song is called Abba. And it, Abba in my language means father. And it's, so this is a song I sing when I go to powwows. If I go to any place, secular, Christian, whatever, I will sing this song. Indigenous people believe in the Creator. When I was going through my schooling and learning different things, theological things, and I always had a bit of an issue because I was raised to be very, I was raised and I was very, very proud to be Native. But then growing up in church, sometimes it became very obvious that being Native American meant that it was somehow second class or sort of not okay or a little bit suspicious because Native culture and Native ways and just being Native somehow made it like it wasn't okay. And I needed to be like less Native in order to be more Christian. One of the things that happened was when I was young, I walked into a church with some beaded earrings, and I was kind of just a kid. And a lady said to me, "Oh, those are Native earrings, right?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Don't they have evil spirits?" And I didn't know what to say. And I thought, gee, I hope not. My auntie gave these to me, you know. But I did learn a lesson that day, and that was never again wear those kind of earrings in that kind of a church. Like, just don't. So it was like I felt like I had to walk into a church and hang up my identity at the door like an unwanted overcoat, winter coat, raincoat, or whatever, and just leave it there and just sort of try to ride under the radar. And people would always ask me, are you Native? Or you're Native? And I would say yes, but I knew immediately after I said yes, and I would never deny it because I'm very, very proud of who I am and where I'm from, even as a little kid. But as soon as I said that, I knew that their brow would furrow and they would, and immediately the next thing that they would say in a Christian setting would be, "There's a lot of witchcraft and darkness in your community, isn't there?" And I sort of thought, well, I guess so. And we had missionaries who came down, drove down the hill into my grandpa's yard, and they were visiting, having a meeting that night. And they said, as we were driving down the hill, we felt the darkness growing, and we felt this evil. And I was sitting around looking, and I looked over, and my grandpa was in the other room, and I thought, oh, thank God he's mostly deaf. Because he didn't just hear that incredibly insulting thing that was about our village. And my perspective was, it's the most beautiful place on earth. You know, the trails, all of the places. And I grew up, I spent half my life at my grandpa's house. That's my home. And I love that land. I love that place. But for missionaries going into a new place, There is a point of testing. So maybe they did feel the darkness. Maybe they did, whatever. And I think that's natural. I think the enemy is going to come at them hard to try to get them out of there, of course. But it doesn't mean that the place has any more darkness or any more evil than any other place that we go, like the mall. Or you know, like it's like somebody said to me, "Don't go to a powwow because there's a lot of evil spirits there." And I'm like, really? Like, we just go flying right past the Buddha and the incense in a Chinese restaurant to get to our sweet and sour pork, right? I mean, nothing's going to stop us. And somehow we magically can walk out of there and nothing really sticks. And we never think about it in those terms. But when we talk about Native issues, right away it's like, oh, this darkness. And I sort of grew up with that and got used to that. And now I kind of joke about it and make light of it. But really, we need to change the way we think about Indians and Canada and the United States. Native people have always believed in the Creator, and some of my elders tell me stories. I say, tell me the creation story of our people. And there's a lot of different reserves, as Linford said. There's 14 different First Nations in the Dakel Nation. And as I would ask the elders these questions, they would say, well, the Creator placed us on our land. And I love hearing those words. I love Native people who are not even remotely Christian talk about the Creator. And then I ask the questions, well, tell me about the Creator. What is this Creator like? And they would say things like, the Creator deserves such high respect. And one of my elders named Lizette Hall, she wrote a book called The Carrier of My People. She's from around the Burns Lake area. Died a couple years ago. But she wrote that the old name for the Creator in our language was translated the Being Up on High. But she didn't put the name in Carrier in her book. So I was, you know, doing my studies and I wanted to quote her and stuff. So finally I got to meet her and I said, "What is the name?" And she told me the name. But I found out the reason that she didn't put it in the book is because a lot of Native people will tell you the translation of the name of Creator, but they will not tell you the original name in the original language because it deserves so much respect. And they say, if I give you, I heard this from some Navajo elders, if I give you this name, you won't show it the respect that it's due. And I thought, that sounds like Yahweh. It sounds like the Old Testament and how the people talked. And so then they would say things like, the Creator started everything, the Creator made everything, the Creator watches over everything, sustains, you know, they use words like that. And I'm like, goodness, it's very, very Old Testament, the way that our Native people think about the Creator. Our Native people talk about this in our creation stories. That's the Carrier creation story. Creator placed us on the land. And that's why we're defined by the land. We identify with it. As soon as I meet another Native person and I find out where they're from, I feel this connection, you know, if they're... Because of that, the Creator placing us on our land, it makes the land sacred. And I think all land is sacred, but there are places where the Creator connects with us. And who said this? Somebody talking about the old Celtic spirituality, they said that there are places where the veil is very thin between our world and the spirit world. And I don't know, I think that maybe has a bit how I feel about my land anyway, about Natle. And this is general revelation. Let me talk about that. I'm talking about general revelation. There are two ways that God makes himself known to us, general revelation and special revelation. I love it that we call Jesus special in that way. You know, he's the special revelation. But general revelation, the Bible says man is without excuse, that we must recognize that there is a God just simply by looking at creation. And even the drive from Richmond, the Richmond Airport, to here yesterday, and the different how the land just kind of winds around mountains and the mist and the trees and the different and the colors, you know, to me, it speaks. It speaks to us. And it said, the land tells us there is a Creator. And Native people have believed in the Creator, and have always believed in the Creator. And it's because the land showed us the Creator. General revelation. And Native people, some of our elders, they seem to have their foot in the physical world and one foot in the spiritual world. They're just that connected, and it's a very interesting thing to me. But and it's kind of spooky sometimes, but... You know, I love our Native people, and I love that connection, and I think that walking alongside of Native people and learning about the story is so important. Sometimes we think we can be ethnocentric and think that our story is the best, the only story. And there's a Cree theologian who's at Ambrose University in Calgary. His name is Ray Aldred, and he defines ethnocentricity as this: I can't love you unless you look like me. And that's how Native people were treated by, and still sometimes are treated today, that we somehow have to just give up everything that it means to be Native, our worldview, our values, everything, our Indianness, and even cut our hair and just try to fit in, because everything that is Native is suspicious and not Christian, cannot be Christian. Whereas we say, no, Christ can be found in our culture. Christ was making himself known to our people through creation. Our job is to just talk to Native people about the Creator and ask those questions. And then, as we listen and as we share, we can introduce Jesus, which is just the next beautiful step. The most beautiful story I've ever heard in my life is, for the Creator loved this world so much, he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him would not perish, but live forever. That's an amazing story. And that story was kind of messed up for Native people. It was brought over from Europe, and it was through colonization and through all of these different things. And the Indian boarding schools had a huge hand in kind of messing up that story. And the story became, you can be a good Christian, but you need to be, you can't be an Indian at the same time. That was what the story said. And that's not true. I'm going to ask Randy if he's going to share a couple of words at this time.
Hi, everybody. It's good to be here with you. And I'm not Native, as you can tell. But I've spent my life, a good part of my life, married to Native. Our children are Native because it's matrilineal society, so our children are considered Natives. And it's a place where God's called me to work and to work alongside of my wife. And we get to do some awesome stuff. Because the last thing that God the Creator told us to do was to visit every single one of the First Nations Native communities in Canada and the United States. We pastored for many years, but moving into an itinerant type of ministry, that's what he put on our heart to do. And we got that message or that calling before we really knew how many places there actually was. And I don't know if any of you all know, but there's a little over 1,000 First Nations communities from Alaska to Florida and from Nunavut to California and everywhere in between. But by God's grace, over the last 10 years, we've been able to visit all 50 states and all 10 provinces in Canada and all 3 territories in the northern part of Canada. And we've been to 600 different communities so far. And we're over halfway done. And if, you know, the Lord gives us his strength, we're going to continue on doing that. This next couple of weeks, we're in Virginia, and we're going to visit some tribes here, some of the first ones that had the first contact with Europeans 400 years ago or more, and we're going to visit some tribes around in Virginia as well. So keep us in prayer if you think about it, about us going to all the different tribes and people groups. In some ways, I share, and I was thinking about today with you students, seminary students. Sometimes when we look at God's call on our life, our mind's taken up with just having a place maybe to go or just getting by or finding our way in it. But I'd like to challenge you a little bit more to think in terms of doing something unique and excellent. Maybe that's God's word to some of you here. You know, to do something that nobody else can possibly do, and do it with excellence, and do it in a great way. And I think of that in our terms. You know, some people told us, you know, you're going to go visit 1,000 different reservations. Do you realize how isolated some of those places are? Way up north, some of the places where Linford's dad and them were, you can only fly in there or get in there by boat.
Canoe.
Or you walk through the bush with a machete, right? But, you know, people said that. Do you realize, you know, but I thought, well, Lord, you wouldn't put that on our heart unless, you know, you're calling us to do that. Maybe we'll never get around to all the places. You know, I think, you know, Jesus reminded his words when he said, you won't go through all the towns in Israel before the Son of Man comes back. And symbolically, that means we're not going to get the job of reaching the world done, you know, before he comes back. It's beyond us. But you and I, we can commit ourselves to do something that's excellent and something that's great, something that's beyond ourselves and overwhelming, and do it for his glory. And so that's our heart. Reach the First Nations people, of North America. And it's great to be here with you guys. Bless you. Reminds me of our seminary days as well. Cheryl said about that, and it's good to be here with you guys.
So I'm just going to close with one more song. Our goal in our ministry is to bring the gospel, and Native people say this phrase all the time, in a good way. In a good way means proper protocol, honoring and respecting the people, listening to the story. And I think that we would all benefit from being able to do this. And also being culturally relevant. Our churches, and in Canada, I don't know about here in the particular area, but where we're from in, or where we live in Canada, the Mennonite churches are doing an excellent, excellent job, probably one of the best of any denomination I've seen, of being intentional in neighborhoods and looking like the neighborhood and trying to just be culturally relevant. And it's a brilliant idea, right? Bring the gospel to people in a way that they can understand it and package it in a way that makes sense to people and doesn't freak people out. Because if we go in with some of our cultural ways and our Christian language that is a different language to some people, we're not going to be relevant. So we need to somehow, if we want the gospel to be preached to people, we need to learn their language. And we need to talk in a way that they're going to understand and they're going to accept. And that's our heart, to go and do that. And I always say, if we have a concert on the reservation, if I get to share in a elementary high school on the reservation, wherever I get to go, my goal is to bring people one step closer to Jesus. And if I can bring them closer to Jesus, then I'm happy. And I know that God is in that, and God can do the rest. And I really believe, even though there has been so many mistakes done by the church to our Indigenous people in Canada and the United States, I believe in the seeds of the gospel. I believe that God can still plant, that has planted those good seeds, and that He still is able to somehow water those and bring those to life. And I'm depending on God for that, because there is, it's overwhelming, some of the Native people who have been just hurt by different things. But we're going to continue. And so we're just going to close out with this one song that I wrote quite a while ago. And Randy was attending Biola. He's in a program, the master's program there in Biola, Intercultural Studies. And one of the profs said, and I wrote this song just simply because I just wanted to be able to share the Creator, Father, Son, and Spirit with our people. And one of the profs gave me some props. He was very happy about this song. So we're going to sing this for you. Creator, Father. Creator. Yeah. Thank you.